For Andy to watch the woman he loves go through so much pain, to have to watch the person, I couldn't watch it. I couldn't watch the person I love go through that. So I think what the man has to go through is incredibly difficult.
We are the Still Parents podcast. I'm Dan, I'm here with Ryan from the Lily Mae Foundation, who set up the Lily Mae Foundation after the loss of Lily's 14 years ago, isn't it, this year?
Correct.
And Matt, who also with the Lily Mae Foundation. Hi. Yeah, after you and your wife Crystal lost Callie's. Is it eight?
She's eight this year, 1st yeah. of June.
Wow. 1st of June. But you gents all right? You good?
Yeah, good, mate. Thank you.
Very well.
Busy weekend, but I've had a bit of sleep today. I'm not going to lie, I've had the day off.
Oh, have you?
I've literally lay on my backside and done nothing. You know, nice. You know the Mickey Flanagan sketch where he does, like, literally, have you seen it, where he talks about doing nothing? Mm. I don't know if I should swear because of the guests that we've got on, but where he talks about doing absolutely fuck all. Yeah. You know, like that one.
What you doing in there? You doing fuck all in there? I'm doing three things out here. If I've got to stop you doing fuck all, that's four.
That's what I've been doing today, the art of fuck all.
Well, it's probably too late now, but I'm about to say, before we officially introduce our guests, do you mind if Ryan, who is quite an angry man, as you will learn over the next however long we're on for, do you mind if he chucks in the odd potty word? And feel free to do it yourself at any point as well.
We'll have a swear box.
I'm going to say, I think we could fill it as well, so don't worry.
Fantastic. I will be ticking the explicit content box when uploading this episode. So let's introduce who we have on tonight. I would like to welcome, and thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, Rebecca Adlington, OBE.
Yeah.
That's right, isn't it? There you go. And husband, Andrew Parsons. Is it Andrew or Andy? Andrew Parsons?
Whichever.
Yeah. Now, do you still go by Rebecca Adlington, or are you Becky Parsons now?
No, I just go by Becky and Becky Adlington. So, yeah, okay. There you go. I didn't change my name.
Now, obviously, when you mentioned Becky's name, the very first thing that springs to mind was, and I know you're probably sick to death of speaking about this over the years, so we'll keep it brief, but first, I can't believe how long ago it is since the Beijing Olympics.
And Rebecca Adlington is bringing it home for Great Britain in absolutely unbelievable fashion. Her arms are still going, her legs are still pumping. She's driving for the wall. She's got 10 metres to go. I am standing up to salute Great Britain's new heroine of the Olympic Games. It's Rebecca Adlington. Two gold medals in one Olympic Games. Rebecca Adlington, you are absolutely brilliant. A massive, massive world record.
I'll get this out of the way, because I got very excited to find out when you were coming on, because back in my younger days, I obviously not to your level, I swam for Leicestershire County when I was when I was 13.
You used to swim the doggy paddle.
I was doing galas all over Leicestershire, doing butterfly, and that was it. No one is ever interested in that story, but I thought, well, Rebecca Adlington might be, so there we are.
Yeah, thanks.
I appreciate the honesty.
I love it. Yeah.
Can you just grab Dan that ladder to get out that hole?
Yeah. Well, I'll fill it with water and I'll swim in it. Yeah.
That's a swimming chat out of the way anyway.
Oh, look at his face.
We've all drowned in that one, haven't we?
I'll be honest.
Sorry. That is very good. Very good.
Well done. I should have saved it to the end. I've been looking forward to that part all day. Yeah. Yeah. Andrew, how are you? You're my mate. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, don't clutch for me now. I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
So how did you guys meet? How long have you guys been together? Just to give a bit of a background for our audience before we get cracking with the rest of the episode.
How long is it? 6 years?
6 years, yeah.
6 years. We met on Bumble.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
The one where the girls have to talk to the guys first. So.
Oh, is that what it is? Is that the difference?
Yeah.
Really?
That was the attraction, yeah. So that was a bit different to the Tinder and stuff back in the day. So, Bumble. And then here we are.
Of course, the reason why you've come onto the podcast today, and once again, thank you so much, is because you guys, since you've been together, you have suffered, and it's quite recently, it's not one, but two miscarriages. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
And is it also correct saying that you do also have you have got a child together?
Yes, and I've got a daughter as well.
Do they swim?
Yeah, both of them swim. It just in lessons. Well, my daughter's just moved into like swim club.
Yeah.
Oh, and okay. Little boy has just started like proper lessons where we're not in the water and stuff with him. So that's been an interesting challenge because he's not actually got in the swimming lessons yet. So it's highly embarrassing.
I had that with mine. Just get all the way there. You battle through traffic for half an hour and they're like, you want to get in the pool? And she's like, do I fuck? Yeah.
What makes it worse is it's my learn to swim program. So it's my business, my job. And then I go down there and I can't even get my own freaking kid to get in the pool. All he does is sit there with his feet in. And I'm like, I have to stand at the side of him, highly embarrassing in front of all the other parents going, oh my God, look at her. And it's like, oh my God.
I think that's great though, because that probably makes it a bit more real, isn't it? Yeah, it's like, yeah.
When I take him, I literally just drop him in.
No shit's given.
I mean, obviously times are changing, aren't they? That's the old school one, isn't it? You hear that a lot. Say, just take them, the babies float, just take them to the water, drop them in, see how they get on. I'm like, no. So you've had two miscarriages within more or less the space of 12 months, wasn't it? You had a 12-week miscarriage in August 2022 and in October 2023, so the following year, had a 20-week miscarriage with your daughter, Harper. And both times were discovered normal routine scan appointments. A word that we come up with a lot, and Matt mentions it a lot, is that naivety, because until something goes wrong, it's not something you really think about, right?
No. Definitely not. And obviously the pregnancies, so there's a 5-year age gap between the kids, but it was one of those that I had two very, very normal pregnancies with the kids. So very routine, no issues. I'm very, very low risk, absolute normal births. Everything was as normal and as box standard as you could possibly put it, whatever you want to classify normal as. But it was, they were very fine, etc. Totally normal. Obviously, Albie is 3. So when we got pregnant the second time, it was only a year after Albie was born. So it was quite quickly after Albie was, etc. And it was one of those, obviously, we were so excited. I think we were really, really pleased. We always wanted another kid, didn't we? So it was one of those that was happy days. But we still weren't we didn't tell anyone or kind of, we didn't still go down that route just because we were like, oh yeah, let's wait until the scan, etc. And all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it was one of those that, like you just said, we went to the scan. It was just the routine 12-week appointment. There was no symptoms of anything. We were very relaxed. I remember being very relaxed in the hospital waiting room. Like, I can remember us like laughing and joking and just, we were just dead chilled, like going into the 12-week scan, just kind of like, just really excited, if you could say that.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of that moment of, obviously, when we had the scan, they obviously told us what happened, but we actually had a molar pregnancy. So it was something that it was really, really different on the scan, because obviously it doesn't look like a normal baby, or I don't know the technical terms for it when it's a molar pregnancy.
Do you guys know that?
I think from memory at the time, a molar pregnancy is when the sperm doesn't quite engage in fully with the egg.
Right.
So it kind of forms kind of...
Yeah, you can either have a full molar or a partial molar.
Yeah.
So there is two different terms, and we had a partial molar.
Yeah.
So it's one of those that basically it doesn't grow properly. So it was never, ever going to survive. It was never, ever going to stand a chance, or it was never developing properly from the start, etc. So, but obviously we had no idea. I'd never even heard of a molar pregnancy. Yeah. Completely honest, I'd never even heard of it. We didn't know what it was.
It's really, really rare, isn't it? So there's not much known about it, and it's like really, really rare.
Basically, it escalates the hormones as well. So your body might think you're like 20 weeks pregnant, but you're not.
Yeah.
So you get, because I was quite surprised at how big I was. And I was like, well, so that was that kind of only really in hindsight that was a symptom, if you like. So I was like, hold on, I shouldn't really have a bump at this stage, but I did. So, but obviously I just thought, because it was my third pregnancy and I'm not a slim woman, that it was just because of everything else. But I think it was kind of the emotion of then everything. So we obviously then got told we had to have emergency surgery and stuff like that. So I had emergency surgery. I lost a lot of blood during that surgery. So I lost like 2 liters or something. I can't even remember what it was. It was a really, really high level of blood. So I had to stay in overnight. I then got discharged the next day, but then the following day we had to get an ambulance called, etc. I just didn't feel right. I then found out I had sepsis.
Oh gosh.
So it was kind of a whole emotional thing of not only did we not have chance to really digest what had happened with the miscarriage, we didn't really have chance to digest what a molar pregnancy was, and then trying to deal with me having sepsis and being in hospital then for a week was just like, it was just mad. So it was just...
We hear it time and time again, isn't it? You're going in and it's just a routine scan and all of a sudden you've lost your child, you're in hospital for a week and you've got sepsis on top of it or another condition, whatever that may be. Just like that, everything's changed. Like you've said, you've gone through two pregnancies, everything's been absolutely fine. There's been no reason to expect that anything would be any different this time, which then I guess is a flip, isn't it, that we discuss. So when soon after you fall pregnant again, was there an anxiety about that one based on what you'd recently been through? Because it wasn't long at all, was it?
Absolutely. There was that anxiety there, wasn't there?
Yeah. You were every step of it, you were cautious when you...
Yeah, I think there was, they did disclose to us there was a small chance that you could have another molar again. So I think I wrongly or naively focused on, the only thing that could go wrong was a molar again, because there was that chance. So obviously they can, a molar is as soon as the sperm and the egg meet. So you know pretty early on, from what I know about it, and again, I'm not a medical professional, but I don't think you can have a molar pregnancy at like 20 weeks. It then just doesn't happen. It happens. Happens from the get-go. So I think we kind of knew once we had the 12-week scan, okay, we're out of the clear for a molar. We knew it wasn't going to be a molar and whatever. And then everything was absolutely fine. We had the 12-week scan. We then had the private one at 17 weeks, and then we heard the heartbeat at 18 weeks. Yeah. And then when we went in for the 20-week was then, I'm really sorry, there's no heartbeat, which we found out. So again, it was one of those, nothing happened. Loads of people have asked me like, oh, did anything happen? Did you have a fall? Did you have like, they asked me in hospital, have you had like a car accident or anything? Like nothing, like absolutely nothing.
How did your reaction to what had happened differ between the two of you? We speak to a lot of men who say that it's the lack of control and not being able to stop something from happening, and that macho, you know, the
stereotype
where the male is supposed to be the protector, the man fixes things, the man is there to, you know, pick people up when things aren't going well. How did it make you feel at that point where, you know, you were given that news at 20 weeks that Harper's heart had stopped?
Well, I guess I'll go back to the actual scan moment. I was obviously sat next to Becky holding her hand, but I could see what the screen that she couldn't see. So obviously there was a little delay. And obviously that delay, your heart stops. And so I could see on the screen that there wasn't anything there, kind of like a few seconds before Becky realised. So straight away, obviously that was horrific and straight, you know, when they got told the news. So we then went to the room, they got taken to a room and stuff. And then Becky was very quickly blaming herself straight away, which was obviously for me quite heartbreaking to see, because, you know, we're a team, and as much as, you know, Becky carries a baby, it's as much of a burden in a sense for me that I try and take on as well to kind of ease that, obviously, as much as you can do. But yeah, I guess the main thing that really hurt me most of all, like, was the fact that Becky was blaming herself for it. It was her body and you know, saying it was her. So I had to kind of, I don't know, gauge that and kind of trying to process that with regards to it wasn't their fault. It was just, you know, it just wasn't, we always said it just wasn't meant to be, you know, it wasn't anyone's fault. It just wasn't.
there's bound to have been times where you had to pick the other person up. And if you don't mind, I would like to get into that because I think it was really interesting for people watching and listening to this podcast, especially when we get couples on, about those dynamics and about knowing when is the right moment to back off, when is the right moment to push someone on something, and also understanding each other. And because there's no doubt your relationship will be very different to the one it was before you had your two losses.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think there's different things about it. I think we noticed with the first one, straight away, how everyone was very, very quick to go, how's Becky? How's Becky? And almost not dismiss Andy, but yeah, everyone would constantly message Andy going, how's Becky? Now, I know part of that was because I got sepsis. So I understand that part of that was the fact that I became very ill with something else. But we were quite, not disappointed, but it was quite hard the first time round of going, hold on, this was Andy's child too. And nobody was asking how Andy is and nobody was checking in on that. So I think we had been through something before where it was kind of like, it was very much focused on the woman. Now, don't get me wrong, we had, obviously the second time round, we had a bereavement midwife and we've had counselling. It's been very, very different the second time round. Whereas we didn't have any support or any help the first time. But I think part of that acknowledgement was us not treating it like a competition. Mm. It was not a case of I'm hurting more because I'm the woman or I'm feeling it more today. I think in couples, things do become a competition, especially when you've already got kids. Well, I'm more tired than you today because I've had the kids or you very often compete in relationships, even though you don't mean to. There's always that element there. I'm more tired than you, or I've got a harder job than you, or I've got bit like that. It just disappears when you go through something like this, because there was days where Andy couldn't even go to work because he was so heartbroken. And there was days where I was absolutely fine and vice versa. And I think it's acknowledgement of that. And I think I acknowledge, we both feel sorry for each other more, as in like, I feel like for Andy to watch the woman he loves go through so much pain. If somebody said to me, Becky, either you or Andy has got to suffer immense pain, I would choose myself every single time because I never want to watch the person I love in that pain. So as a man, to have to watch the person, I couldn't watch it. I would literally be like, no, let it happen to me. I couldn't watch the person I love go through that. So I think what the man has to go through is incredibly difficult. And mentally, emotionally, etc. Not necessarily physically, and there is a physical difference here, but that physical element is just a part, it was one part of it. And Andy had to witness something that was incredibly difficult and hard. And it's both of your child. That Harper was 50% both of us. So I think we learned very quickly afterwards to support each other. Nothing was a competition. We're both suffering. We're both suffering in different ways and at different times, at different days. And we almost just had a code, didn't we, where we kept going, I had a moment today. Yeah. Oh, I had a moment. We kept saying we had a moment. And it was just that we found something really difficult. And that was our thing to each other, where we just gave each other a hug and we said, do you want to talk about it? Yes or no? And then that happens. And I think that worked incredibly well.
That's such an amazing insight that you've just given. That's brilliant. Hearing that from your angle, especially Becky as well, because originally we set this up because, as we say, guys don't speak enough. We talk a lot of bollocks, as we say, but maybe not always about the right things at the right time. And the fact that you've come on, and especially what you've said about Narayan, I know you want to come in with something.
No.
Especially with the relationship dynamics, when you said it's not, because unfortunately a lot of relationships are like that. It's not, you know, it's, I've done that, you know, it's that competition.
I was exactly the same as what Becky has just said there about Andy, but what I was feeling about Amy.
Okay, yeah.
A feeling of worthlessness. It's a feeling of failure. I think from my perspective and looking at it as an outsider here and speaking to somebody that is a sports person, where everything is very much individual and you're in your own space for a long time when you're up and down that lane in a swimming pool and you're in your own headspace and what have you, is from a psychological perspective, where Andrew said that you were apologising, that you felt that it was your fault, that you'd failed and stuff like that, is could you differentiate between you as the competitor and you as the person? Do you feel that the emotion of failure, because that's ultimately what you were feeling, was co-joined because of the experiences you'd had at a competitive swimming level?
I've never actually thought about it in that way before, because obviously I retired so long ago, so I feel like it was like such a long time ago that I swam, so I almost even forget that I swam, to be honest. But it's one of those that I think your job as a mom, from the minute you find out you're pregnant, is to protect your child at all costs. Like, as a mom, I am very protective of my two kids. If I could wrap my two kids up in cotton wool, I would. I'm that sort of mother in general. So I think as the responsibility when you get pregnant is huge, because you are just trying to protect that baby. And now I do everything by the book, if you like. I don't smoke in general, but as in, I didn't drink, I wasn't eating all the things that you're not meant to, I was laying on my left side to go to sleep, and doing everything you possibly could. So deep down, I know there was nothing I could have done differently, literally nothing, because I did everything by the book that everyone tells you to do. So there's obviously some people, if you've even been in one of those accidents that they asked us about, it's still not your fault, because obviously you don't need to do any of that, but nothing had even happened. So taking all the vitamins, I was doing all the right thing, etc. But I still feel like a responsibility that I couldn't keep my child safe. That responsibility ultimately lies with myself. Obviously, once you give birth, you share that responsibility as parents, because both of you have the responsibility. But for those 9 months, it is solely on you as the woman. So I will always feel some level of guilt or sadness that I couldn't make that happen for whatever reason. We don't know. It's completely unknown. We still don't know the answers. We've got our post-mortem results next month, and we might not even find anything out even when we have them. So it's very unlikely we're going to find out anything. But it's one of those that, certainly as an athlete, I know my body so well. As an athlete, you become so in tune with your body. I am massively into like recovery, my sleep. Andy knows if I'm ill at any point, he needs to put me to bed.
Are you scared to wake Becky up, Andy? Go on, be honest.
I don't need much sleep, so it's a bit of a dream, really. She can sleep in like she had kids, so
yeah,
works well.
But as an athlete, your gut instinct is in your body, because you have to know your body inside and out, because it's your tool. It's how you become a professional sportsman, is that you I was angry with myself that my gut and my body wasn't telling me anything was wrong either. So there's always going to be that connection with sport in that way.
Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Completely.
But it's interesting, because what Ryan was saying about the kind of separating of the two people, I do think that happens naturally anyway when you lose a child, because I think you almost become, we said it quite a lot, where you become a different person. You're different to when you before you lost. So you almost have to get to know yourself again anyway, and you have to get to know each other again anyway. Has there been anything around that with you guys where you feel like you're different from before the losses? It doesn't always happen, but it's always interesting to ask the question.
What Matt's trying to say is, do you like each other more now or more 2 years ago?
No. You know, when we obviously lost Harper, I remember we got given all these little brochures and all these sort of things, and there were some statistics in there which was really, really uplifting, which were like, you know, a lot of these sort of things ending, people divorcing or splitting. It's quite a big thing I read about, and I was like, Christ, this is quite extreme. But to be fair, I mean, it's gone the entire opposite way for us. We've actually said numerous times, it's brought us closer. You know, we've let, previously I might have little things that argue over little things around the house, little pathetic things, which, you know, after having this experience, we just let those things go. You know, let those things go now. There's literally big things in life
We've had that mentioned so many times. Those little things, like when the traffic lights turn red as you're getting to them. You know that bit when it's like, do I brake? Do I not brake? Do I go? Is there a police there? Fuck it, let's go. Those little things.
I think we said as well, didn't we? Like when we were having our counselling, we want Harper's memory to be that she's made our love stronger. We don't want Harper to have torn us apart, because then that will give a negative association with Harper. Like, and we want that association to be that, if anything, she's what her love is what gives us strength every day, and we want to be. And I think obviously I wouldn't want anybody to go through any sort of loss to make their connection stronger with their partner at all. I wish it would never ever happen. But if there is anything, it's that opportunity where it's like, hold on, Harper wouldn't want us doing that. Like that love needs to come through, and we need to put those petty things aside, and she needs to give us strength, and we want to provide that strength and have her part of our family in that way.
Yeah, we've also we haven't actually done anything with ashes yet, but we plan on doing something. But I mean, even on the wall here, we've got like a fingerprint, handprints and stuff. My mum and dad and sisters bought us like a blossom tree, which we planted outside.
Oh wow!
Yeah, we've got reminders around the house and the garden of it. And also, there's one thing we read when we were in the bereavement suite. What's it called again?
The Snowdrop Suite.
Snowdrop Suite. In Withershaw, with Olivia, who's the best bereavement midwife you could ever imagine. There was a quote, wasn't there, which was like, when things go against you, you always, say, oh, why always me? But then you never, when things are going really well, you never stop and say sort of the same thing,
why me?
It's very true. Yeah.
Quote stuck with us. You know, I got it maybe a bit wrong then. But that quote stuck with us quite a lot as well. You know, we've got two beautiful, healthy children. Lovely,
so true.
Lovely family and stuff, and the dogs and a lovely house. And you know, we have a lovely life
together,
on our health and family. And you know, we've kind of made sure we appreciate them, you know, while we have them. So that's been quite a big point for us.
Big driver, yeah.
I think it changes perspective, doesn't it? It changes perspective on things a little bit, you know. Mm. And I think it,
and having that attitude as well. That, I mean, as you guys are showing all through the podcast, with that attitude, as you just said, Andy, with the, we have a tendency, isn't it, to moan if things aren't going away, and obviously looking out from trivial circumstances as well. Those, when something's going right, you don't go, well, bloody hell, my luck's doing well here, isn't it? Look at me. Why is this happening? It's such a true thing, and it brings me back as well, Rebecca, because we were talking about your profession. So double Olympic champion, OB, all of your achievements throughout your career, and to do what you do is a different type of everyday discipline, exactly, you know, with your body, with your nutrition, with your sleep. And although you're now retired from it, but there has to be elements that are part of that which just permeate through your everyday life anyway, which when it comes to dealing with a tragedy, maybe in a way that helped you with, you know, to be with your sort of, I guess, your mental armory to take on what is, you know, what's happened, and you can't change it.
Exactly. And we can't change what's happened. And it's one of those that, I've come from a very disciplined industry within swimming. Swimming is a very disciplined one as well. It's up early starts, literally hours upon hours in a pool, etc. And all of that sort of stuff. And we're very... I would say I'm a very logical person anyway. I'm a very realistic, logical, what's the word? Fantasist? Is that a right word?
Control freak. No,
I am a control freak. Yeah, it
is. I reckon there's going to be an argument.
I'm not a daydreamer. I'm not a...
You're a realist, aren't you?
I'm not that sort of...
Is it pragmatist? Is that the word?
Yeah, exactly that. So I think it's one of those that I think, and certainly when these sorts of things happen as well, a lot of it is very medical that goes,
happens.
There is a medical, like, so even though you're going through this emotion, there is a lot of medical stuff that comes with it. So even when they first come and talk to us after, they were like, okay, you've got to take this tablet. And I was like, well, what the heck is this tablet? And it's all very medical that you're trying to digest as well. So you kind of have to still have the element of practicality, because that was the one thing that we were both like, well, what happens now? Mm. Okay, the baby's got to come out. And then what happened? There's a lot of order to stuff, which is, as you guys know, that's a lot to digest, because if you don't know about it, which we didn't, we were very, very naive to that.
We had at once,
But we had no clue that you'd have to give birth to
it. Which is mad, because we've never actually thought about it, but we found it mad that I had to give birth. And I think that was because with the 12-week one, it was just you've got to have surgery. Yeah. So I just assumed it would be the same for 20. I was very naive. Yeah. And then it was
unless you knew about it, you wouldn't know, which is like
exactly. And that's the thing, what you were saying about your logical side. In general, baby loss doesn't do logic. Like, it just doesn't do logic, like, afterwards. And you know, with the loss and stuff and the emotions, you really want to try and put it back together again. But actually, it just doesn't do that. And I've had the amount of clients that I've seen where they try and piece this together in a logical way. And I have to say to them, actually, just slow down a little bit, because you're thinking with your logical brain. And that's fine to try and piece this back together, but actually you're not going to be able to do that all the time, and you have to allow a little bit of chaos.
But,
you know, but actually chaos can be good to allow that stuff to come back together a little bit. But if you are, like, I'm chaotic. I'm completely chaotic, right? I am. So actually, to be fair, your life does become chaotic, and it does, your emotions become chaotic, and your feelings, and you have to just find a way through that. You guys are not even a year into your loss kind of thing. So I imagine there's still a bit of chaos going on at times, but you're doing the best you can to piece that back together, right? You know what I mean? So,
Matt, how do you find, because you're 8 years in now, so that, do you still get those moments of chaos when you get those days, you know, like we've said many times, time, nothing's going to change, nothing's going to bring Callie back, but the time affects you in certain ways.
Yeah, yeah. So why do you think I do these stupid challenges for her birthday every year?
But
the reason I do, like I said, the reason I do them is because I have to. That's how I logically get through. Yeah,
and I've seen the effect it has on you when you don't. Like when Matt, look, it runs, brilliant sportsman, and if you don't do it,
it's hard work for me.
Yeah, you turn up in here and all right, stink me.
it balances me out.
Exactly.
It's a balance for me. You know, that's what I've found. I found my balance, and my balance is running. So have you found those releases that you can kind of get, as far as it might be work, it might be exercise? Are there things there that allow you to release those emotions and stuff? Does that work for you guys?
Initially, it's really random, but I've been doing poetry.
Right. Nice.
Yeah. So I've past few years I've done, like, you know, poems for, like, not best man speech, but like speeches at weddings for my friends and stuff. I've done poem about them. Done poems for like certain things throughout the year. So I decided to do a poem for Harper. So finished it for her due date, didn't I? So
that's nice. Beautiful. Is that something you'd always been interested in, or it just sort of came about?
I mean, I've always had a bit, like, you know, if someone's like write a poem about this, I don't know, I just kind of feel like it's good to get my, like, emotions out.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So you're one of life's creatives.
Well, when I started the new job and stuff, I'd get the train to work and stuff, and it was, some days I shouldn't really be going to work because I was sat on the train in tears and writing all these things down, and I'd get to work and I'd be dreading someone saying, how are you? Because I know I wouldn't be able to answer out. Well up and getting told to go home. But, you know, being a new job, it was hard. I had to kind of show my
You don't know anyone yet. You know, when you, if you look back, I know it hasn't been that long, but as time continues to progress and you look back and maybe you see the stuff that you were writing on the train on those days in that moment, and you look back, or have you even looked back and see how you feel now revisiting it?
I mean, I think it was the time that James Blunt released his song about his daughter, so that probably didn't help because that wasn't repeating my ears. Those sort of things in my head was like, I know it sounds silly, but like we're like a bit of a sign, because when it happened, the first song I literally heard on the radio was that song, and I just thought, oh, that kind of really speaks to me. So that's kind of what made me think with regards to maybe I can write my feelings down. And to be fair, I think I've done a pretty good job of it in a non-arrogant way.
It is an amazing poem.
So, we have counselling with Karen. That we've had really good help with. So that's been something which I mentioned to her at Petals that I wanted to do. So, you know, I've kept her in the loop, I've sent her it and stuff, and she was really encouraging of that as my kind of my release in a way. I've always been, you know, really, really keen footballer and cyclist. So that's always something which whenever I get on my bike, that's just like my time to just kind of like let my mind wander and just
That's you could try something different here. Do you still play much footy?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because you know, I mean, we all play. You know what it's like, because it's a different language on the pitch, and there's always that you have your nemesis on the opposite side, don't you? And you normally, you know, start getting under your skin after 5 or 6 minutes. Right. You're getting it. You are right. Really throw him off. You could just whip out, start reading him some poetry when he's on the ball. See what he does. I'd pay to watch that. That'd be amazing.
Is the poem that you wrote for Harper? Is it? Have you sort of made it public? So, or is it something that you've wanted to keep to yourself?
Well, I kind of wanted to do like one for her birthday. Kind of get one for like a longer one. And then I did put one as well in a casket as well.
Right.
Which is like a shorter one. In my head, I kind of thought down the line a little bit might want to share it. I mean, I've not got anyone to share it with really, but put it on my sort of like Instagram or whatever, just as a kind of, reference to her, kind of like a bit of a nod to her really, rather than showing it off. It's more like, you know, this is what I've done from my thoughts for her. So
I
think that's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're so modest about it as well. The fact you even sort of went to great pains then to go, I'm not showing off. It's just that you're putting it. You know, that's a weird thing with social media, isn't it? Anyone puts anything up, it's like, what are they doing that for? You don't have to bloody look at it, do you? Yeah. We've always said this.
We've actually had some comments come out on come through social media, which I'm going to read out to you.
Could you do them in a poetry style?
You have to give me some words that rhyme.
Roses are red.
So the first one is from Faye Allen, and she has said, first listen to this podcast and it's brilliant. Thank you for sharing your story. Another lady called Sally Frost. Thank you for doing this, both of you. This is very similar to my daughter and son-in-law, who had an 11-week miscarriage in October 22 and then lost their son Henry at 33 weeks to a stillborn birth. So I'm really sorry to hear that, Sally. And also Little Wings of Hope UK, thank you to Becky Adlington and Andrew Parsons for continuing to share Harper with us and your journey as parents to the brightest star in the sky. We are so grateful at how much you are doing for baby loss and raising awareness during this difficult time. We will be sure to listen to the podcast.
Thanks very much for sending those in. If you're listening to this and it's not the live one, you still want to get in touch, you can follow our social Still Parents Podcast and our website stillparentspodcast.co.uk. We're not too far from the end. Thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything that you'd like to mention that we haven't brought up before I get stuck in with the final couple of bits or anything like that?
Obviously, you know, with regards to like the male in this situation and the dad.
Yeah.
One thing which is great, when we first met Olivia, our bereavement midwife from Withenshaw Hospital, was she gave me the contacts of Dad Matters UK. So I had a guy called Wes who was an absolute legend. Do you know him?
No, but he got mentioned on this podcast with a guest. Who was it? It was the Viking guy.
Kieran Anders,
who came on. We had Kieran Anders. So if you, I think it's about episode, we'll send you the link to it. But yeah, Kieran Anders from Dad Matters was on recently. Yeah, amazing, he mentioned Wes, yeah.
Yeah, so I had Wes, and Wes messaged me every day at the time at the start, and then he said he gave me a call every week from then on.
Oh wow!
Just 5 minutes, an hour, 2 minutes, like so.
Yeah,
it was nice to have like just a man just kind of.
Yeah,
I've got your ear. If you want to chat to me, let me know. And so I had quite a lot of quite a lot of really useful conversations with him, and he's been fantastic. So we've come to the end of our little sort of communication over phone, but we still text and keep in touch. That's really nice.
Great. We've never met Wes, but he's been bigged up a lot recently on the show, so I think we should get him on at some point as well, haven't we? Because he's gone, Wes.
I've had counselling in the past for anxiety and things like that, so I have been through that, so I kind of already knew a little bit what it was about, whereas I think Andy was quite a little bit more like, you weren't know about it, were you? But you were just a bit more, apprehensive, is that correct to say? Like, you were a bit more like, I'm not sure about it.
Yeah, I was apprehensive, but I wasn't against it at all. But I think previously in my life, when it was like, you should get counselling therapy, not to me personally, but like other people that I knew, I was always,
had a stigma around it, didn't it?
I was always like, I'm fine, I don't need... I mean, I'm sure that's relatable to a lot of guys, especially them. But when it came to this, I think the main thing for this, which was appealing, was the fact that we did it together. So it was couples. So that was really nice because, in a sense, Becky kind of held my hand in, like, for the first few sessions, because I was not a fantastic talker compared to Becky, as you might have seen a bit. So that was nice to do it together, because it was an experience. And Karen from Petals was absolutely amazing. And I've spoken to quite a few, some of my friends who've been through similar, and they've said they've been through like 5 or 6 different counselors before they found their one. So we were hugely fortunate to get the first lady we had, Karen, who was, doesn't she say?
Yeah.
Really good fit.
It's interesting, actually, because when we've spoke about counselling a few times, there's one, I've mentioned it plenty of times, but it stands out because I was going to ask, did you do the counselling separately or if you did it together? You said together, because it's the Ian Lawton episode, wasn't it? He used to go when it's one of our early episodes, and he didn't find the counselling as a couple. And again, it could have just been the environment or the person that was leading it, but he didn't find it useful and he stopped going. But when he went to it was like a dad's only one, not to say that he didn't want to be with his partner, but he just needed something which I guess was directly conducive to him getting out what he needed to get out. And he said that was the moment that he started to grieve properly and everything changed from that. So it is interesting to see that is, and the reason why I'm saying this for anyone listening is, it's not always the case, is it?
There is no manual.
It's whatever, whichever version works for you, or maybe even both, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it was amazing as well to have that every week. We had a specific hour every single week just to talk about that. So, we'd have, if we didn't have that, we'd be like passing comments of like, oh, you haven't felt very well today. Yeah, same. Yeah. And then that's it. But we got to that hour and we could literally like unload, and we were guided through it so well and asked the right questions and, made to think about a few things which I wouldn't even thought about. So that was just great.
Is doing something like this, like a weird sort of alternative counselling? Because you're on as a couple and you're talking about something that, I've never met you before and I don't come and meet you in the street and go, tell us about the worst 2 days of your life.
it is true.
You said that when it came, didn't you?
I did say that, because we used to have counselling on a Monday night, so it felt like I was...
And it's Monday night, isn't it, when we do this?
And we literally would sit here every single week.
Right.
And the only difference is I would normally sit here in my Aldi hoodie. We're not quite dressed the same, but it is one of those that... the more you talk about it, the better it is. And I think it's really like, we are, as everyone is, you become so busy with life. We've got 2 kids. We both work full-time jobs. You just get busy again. And it's not that you mean to, but like Andy's just alluded to, it's very hard to spend a solid amount of time talking about something. And you naturally feel better when you do. But when you're busy, it is just passing comments or a 5-10 minute chat on something. It's not a solid amount of time. So any opportunity, and like this, you naturally feel better just from dedicating that time to talk about it. Doesn't matter in what setting. It doesn't matter whether it's with each other, with a mate, with a colleague, with strangers that you've never met before on a podcast. As long as you're dedicating a bit of time to sit down and just talk. Don't go on your phone. Don't turn the telly on. Don't do any of that. And just talk about it. And in whatever fashion, it doesn't have to be in a sad capacity. It doesn't have to be that you're having a meltdown. You could talk about it in a positive way as well, but just talk about anything that you need to. And when I say in a positive way, I just mean you could talk about, like we just said the other day, oh, the blossom tree's coming out. And both of us just went, had a really nice moment, even though it's something horrific that happened. It was really nice to see that the tree was coming to life. And it was like, that was just a nice moment, wasn't it? And it's important that you have those times as well.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's the Still Parents podcast. Before we go, two very quick final questions. One is, I can't not ask this, Becky, because it's just a few weeks' time. The Olympics is starting. Are you coming out of retirement?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
How do you reckon you'd do?
Awful. I wouldn't even.
I might have a better chance.
I guess I wouldn't even. I am luckily going to be out in Paris, and which would be absolutely amazing. I'm working on the swimming. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to going out to Paris, but just in a completely different capacity and near competing.
And that'll be great over there for a few weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, lovely.
And I'm pretty sure you may have heard this before. I'm only saying this because I get horrific lookalikes as a bold person. So this is actually meant as a compliment.
Where are you going with this?
But how many times, Becky, have you been asked if you're actually married to Joey Essex?
I was just going to do an Essex impression back to you, but I haven't got it more like
To be fair, the way I thought you were going with that is I got called Paula Radcliffe the other day, so I thought you were going
to.
I either get called Sally Gunnell or Paula Radcliffe.
Sally Gunnell.
That's lazy, isn't it?
You look nothing like Sally Gunnell.
Just because.
I look nothing like a I can Sally Gunnell. Multiple times call me Sally Gunnell and Paula Radcliffe.
It's just because you've been in the Olympics, I've got to name another Olympian. That
they're blonde. All three of us are blonde. Yeah. And that's literally, we're something from sport and we're all blonde. So you just get...
Exactly.
But Sally Gunnell.
Sally Gunnell.
She looks more like Steve Redgrave than Sally Gunnell.
She looks more like Linford Christie than Sally Gunnell.
Linford Christie.
But no, you look nothing like Sally Gunnell. No. Nothing like her at all.
I don't think I do either, but here you go.
I would imagine as well. Is the swimming one? Is it usually the first event in the Olympics?
Week, isn't it?
First 8 days the swimming is. So we have the opening ceremony. Swimming begins. So
Oh, brilliant! Was there final one? I promise. Was there another Olympic sport that you wanted to have done if swimming hadn't have been the one?
No.
There you go.
Just wondered. I've just got to put it out there.
Wanted to be a runner like Sally Gunnell.
To be fair, a lot of swimmers, a lot of people can move, or not move, sorry, but as in we've got very similar body shape to the rowers. And I think there has been a certain people that have gone from swimming to rowing or something else.
So
I think they are.
It's VO2 max and stuff, and high VO2 max and shot like
shoulders.
Strengthening your shoulders and your.
Listen, thank you so much. Thank you to everyone who's been watching or listening to this, whenever that is. If you do have a moment or two to give us a review, we would absolutely love it. If you, I know you got better things to do, but if you can take a moment, we'd really appreciate it. It does help us out. If you give us a follow on our social, Still Parents Podcast, and our website, stillparentspodcast.co.uk. We'll be back very, very soon. But to Becky Adlington and Andrew Parsons, a.k.a. Oscar Wilde, the poet.
Oscar Wilde. Yeah, Oscar Wilde and Sally Gunnell.
So to Oscar Wilde and Sally Gunnell, thank you very much. for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we'd love to speak to you again at some point in the future and see how you guys are getting on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone. Gents, you done? We done?
I'll just finish with a couple of comments.
Yeah, go
people
for it.
Have said so. In fact, Dads Matters.
Is that Wes?
Wes has been, he's had a shout out on the comments saying that Wes does a fantastic job supporting bereaved dads, as obviously Andy said there. Kieran, Anders, thank you for sharing both from Dads Matters UK. You're both amazing and incredibly brave, sharing such personal story to potentially help countless others. And the final one, excellent chat, guys. Thanks so much for sharing. And Andy, Becky, thank you for talking so positively about your Petals counselling. Miss you. And guess who that's from?
Karen.
Karen, yeah.
Yeah. brilliant. Thank you so much. Take care, Andrew and Becky. And thank you so much. This is the Still Parents podcast. And we will be back very, very soon.